Such a joy for us to be together. We've seen the flyer for the Orthodox Survival Course. This is a poor example of it, but beautifully done and sent out online. And some priests I know who are doing it have 10 sessions, 12. Father Paul and I spent a while thinking, let's start with 8, so as to make it condensed as possible, so that it actually is doable and not too long. But I would ask you, as much as possible, to be present for the actual sessions. We are recording it. I was tempted not even to record it, because I feel like in our crazy world, it's very easy to kind of throw pearls to swine. And there's so many crazy people in the world looking for ways to attack things and destroy things, and would love to do nothing less than destroy us. And it's true. And so I hesitate to put it out there, but only for the sake of people who want to be healed and find its delicate balance. So we're not doing a video. We're not live streaming. I'm just done with that. But maybe the church is becoming more local in all of these times, which is very beautiful. I think it's important that we're together like this, seeing each other. So if there happens to be a time like you're out of town and you can't come, then I understand that. Then we're going to have it recorded and there's a place where you can listen to it. But don't make it the norm, because it's not the same as being together. Part of what we're going to talk about is we're living in an artificial world, like a virtual world, and it's pretty satanic and crazy and causing lots of anxiety. And we need to return to like a real world with real people and embraces, and it speaks to the opposite of what's happening in the world, right? We need to return to loving each other. The world wants to keep us separate from each other. It's quite demonic what's happening, so we need to fight against it at all costs. So be here with each other as much as possible. If you can't come for some reason, make it the exception, then just listen to it as well, and they'll be online. So just an overview. Today we're going to talk about, I want to give you a lay of the land, right, today. And then over the next few weeks, Father Paul, we're really blessed to have Father Paul, and we're really a good team together. There's many ways in which he's so well read that I'm not, and especially about modern issues, like what does the church think about LGBT, and is it unloving, and what do we think about transgender, about all the craziness. It's moving so fast, most people don't know what's going on, so we just go with the world, and at terrible expense to our souls often. So Father Paul's doing lots of research before the whole COVID thing started. He was going to give the first kind of presentation to a parish and the Orthodox take an approach to the transgender issue, and really the first in the country to be done. He's going to, and so using that research, so I think it's going to be really quite fruitful. So, necessary? I guess it's necessary. We need to detach from technology after this. I'm not very tech savvy. Only on Sundays, my investments. I guess that'll work. Can you hear me? Is that better? I guess. So, today I want to kind of give you a lay of the land. Father Paul, what are we facing? Where are things actually at? But also with a lot of hope. And then next week, which is the Feast of the Mother of God, so we want to miss that, the Feast of the Panagia, big feast. Father Paul's going to talk about progress and purpose in modern society, meaning what the world calls progress and purpose, and what great things are happening for us is regress. So we have to be careful that we're not in step with the world. The world, this is so great, and really it's destroying our souls. So Father Paul's going to speak about this false sense of progress, what true Christian progress looks like moving forward towards the coming of our Lord. The next Sunday, faith and virtues. What does it mean to have faith? How's that different with what the world calls faith? What the world calls virtue, we call virtue. Boy, more than ever, that is separating. If we're not careful, we're lulled into the sleep of going that same way and then having nothing to do with the virtues of the saints and then wondering why we're a mess. And the fourth session we'll be all doing again, which will be what we'll call the healing of the soul in the Orthodox Church. So I'm going to give you an outlook on what's happening today and give you courage of how we need to face it. And then that's going to be a practical day. Like, okay, what does this look like for us to do this as a community? And we're going to speak especially about a great modern saint, a father and son, Father Saint Alexei Mechev of Russia, and his son, Saint Sergius. They were both priests. Saint Sergius, his son, was a new martyr killed by the communists. Had an amazing parish in the heart of Moscow, which was much like our parish. His ministry has been an icon for me of how to live like a monastery in the world. Not in a weird way, but in a truly like a repenting family. That's what it took to get through communism, and that's what it's going to take for us, I think, in individual parishes to do that. And I want to encourage you with those tools. The next one's number 5, how to and not to share your faith. We're going to talk about, and it's going to be part and parcel with living our faith. So if we're aware of these issues and we're living in a unique, different, transfigured way, then
that way of life will attract people to you. But we're going to talk about practically in these times, how do we share our faith? It's more essential than ever. And there's ways not to do it that are horrific and insulting, and there's ways that are really powerful to do so. We'll talk about that for all of us, you know, non-priests. The next time, September 12th, the human person. That's huge. There's lies about who the human person is. Falsehood. Knowing Orthodox, they call it Orthodox anthropology. What is a human being? It's unbelievably being attacked now. And it was the norm for thousands of years. And so we're going to address what is sexuality, what is normalcy, what is homosexuality, transgenderism, all that. So we're not like, oh, the church is just unloving and they're bigots and we have no answers to that, which is entirely untrue. December 19th, what is human dignity? Such a degraded society we live in now. How do we approach courtship and dating in the Orthodox way? Not like the world, not shacking up like everybody else and then coming and getting a blessing slapped on it by the priest. No way. That's why everything's a disaster, right? Abortion, hopefully that one's clear. We'll talk about it though. You know, contraceptives. How do we have children? You know, fertility treatments. How do we, all these moral issues, a lot of people have no idea and then they end up in agony and we want to avoid that. We want to be healthy. And then the last session, September 26th, will be like a recap. And then we'll have a big Q&A where you can ask any questions you want and take time throughout the whole course. And so, and hopefully this will lead into more classes and more things. But we want to, September 1st is the ecclesiastical new year. The church new year is September 1st. So with that, we want to begin post these crazy times, in the midst of these crazy times, to kind of strengthen you. So it's a blessing for us to be together. You know, it was hard when we weren't together for a little while. And I'm sorry about that. Really sorry about that. I think we all get a pass. I pray before God we all get a pass for the beginning because it was scary at first. What's happening? All these kind of things. And I think vision's becoming clearer about how the world is. And as such, I'm glad we can be together. It's always nice to be together. But especially in these unprecedented kind of crazy times, really our fellowship and our tight-knitness and our love for each other is, it's not just nice, it's like an essential consolation. Like, and you read in ancient communities from the 1st, 2nd, 3rd centuries, even all the persecutions, what gave the Christians strength to be Christians was each other. Right? No person is a Christian alone. So I'm really thankful that for a good turnout and for your sacrifice to the community. So, we call this for a reason. Orthodox Survival Course. Now, I kind of ripped off a very holy man, Blessed Father Seraphim Rose, if you know this. He was a holy man, died in the early 80s, and he did this course mostly to converts, when there wasn't as many converts in America. And he was speaking to this, to what he thought was an insane world. Wow. What would he say now? You know? I mean, we're talking 40 years ago, and it's the pacing is unreal now. But he saw the need then, and many of us priests have been saying the need is all the more great now for an Orthodox survival course. I'm not following his exactly. His is very different, very beautiful, but much longer and more philosophical and literary important. But we're doing something different. We stole the name. So why are we calling it this? Why is this necessary? So why is, I didn't call it just come learn about your faith. Orthodox catechism, something like this. Because that's not where we're at, to be honest with you. You know, survival implies something, right? If you don't do it, what happens? You die, right? So we know that like wilderness survival, you don't know what you're doing, you're dead. Your physical life is, if you're out at sea, you know, you know what you're doing, you're dead. And that's your physical short life. But for us in the spiritual life, it is, in our immortal souls, it's far, far more important. That's where we're at. So people, I know people have said to me, really, Father? Come on. Because in a lot of people, this triggers an emotion. An emotion is called fear. Right? Fear that life might not go on the way it always has for you. Well, newsflash, it's not. Right? We've lived in a bubble for a long time as Americans. I think this is the longest. You know, this is the longest standing republic in the history of the world. Is that correct? I believe it is. The longest standing constitutional republic that's ever existed. America. That's not good, right? But we trust in God, so we're not apocalyptic. People think, are so afraid to hear this, oh, survival. Look, read the Bible, right? Read the Lord's words, right? In the world you'll have tribulation, but I've overcome the world. Right? So don't be afraid. They will, you know, blessed are you who mention you should be persecuted, and they shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. So this idea that we've kind of ducked that somehow is really not scriptural and kind of false. It's actually a spectacular time to be a Christian, I think. It's much better, actually. It kind of separates the men from the boys. And there's a famous, he was a Protestant pastor, Lutheran. His name was Richard Wurmbrand. Have you heard of him? Raise your hand. I'm going to send a link to his his thing, Tortured for Christ. I watched it last night with my kids. Oh, I just wept through it. He was with Orthodox people in Romania, and he was living in similar times, but much worse. They took over, the communists took over, and Christians all over the place were just kowtowing to it. They were trying to say how great, you know, communism was, and how it's like the early Christians, and, you know, all the Antifa lies only then. Said by church people, because they wanted to save their skin. And there's a great time from his book. There's a book, First Portrait for Christ, where he's sitting in this presentation. You know, Stalin in the background, who would kill 60 million Christians, and all these religious leaders are talking, and his wife, they're sitting there, his wife can't stand it. She can't stand. She's like, these are lies. Like, how are they betraying Christ by saying this? And you know what he said? He says, if I get up and talk, it's really moving. You're not going to have a husband anymore. You know what she said? I don't need a coward for a husband. Awesome. So he got up. They thought he was going to come down and say a great thing. He was very influential. And he destroyed the communists. And made it very clear. If our young people are very unclear, it is demonic. We know where it leads. Mass prison camps. So it's like this, everything's in common. It's so great. It's like early Christian times. No. Winston Churchill said, the ancient church was, what's mine is yours. Communism is, what's yours is mine. Right? We could talk a long time about that. We will in future sessions. But it's a disaster. And he let them know. And for that, he was in prison, torture camp, for 14 years. Incredible torture. Oh, incredible faith. Really encouraging. He talks about all the Christians who gave their lives. I mean, you could go on. The new martyrs of the communist yoke are so inspiring. Now, let me get this straight. I'm not interested in that, right? I like my life, right? I enjoy being with each of you. I have a wonderful family. I'm very comfortable, but that should make us a little worried. Because how are we distinguished from everybody else? There's a great bishop, Metropolitan Neophytos of Morfou. He's a holy bishop in Cyprus, and he's a disciple of St. Paisius, I believe, and St. Porphyrius. And he says, you read the Gospels, and you read the lives of the saints, and then you can look at your life and go, he's like, I'm a bishop, I wear these nice vestments, I do all this thing. I read Gospel readings constantly about, you know, carrying your cross. I read the lives of the martyrs, and I live this cushy life. He says, what a great thing that maybe it's time for us to actually live like Christians. How beautiful is that? It is beautiful if you have a warrior mentality. That's what happens. You made a catechumen. It's called the Newly Enlisted Warrior of Christ. So whether you knew it or not, when you signed up not just to have like a cool social club or like a little part of your life. You signed up to give your whole life. And I sent that thing out in the email. It's your whole life. And if you're all in, it's absolutely stunningly beautiful. And you can endure anything that's going to come. And your life will be more meaningful than any worldly person. But this, all this recent stuff that's happening in the world, we start talking about it, raises fear because it exposes how worldly we are. And how unattached to Christ we are, and how attached we are to the world. And that's a really healthy thing to do. And that's the beginning of this process, is let's get very real with ourselves and figure out actually what's going on. So things are that bad. I've heard, outside the church, I'm not surprised, my worldly family, things like that, like, they think that this idea is crazy. They think things are getting better, medicine, everything. They can't see the, like, depression's at an all-time high. You know what I mean? Like, the world's a mess, but, you know, new technology, new this. It's this lie of progress that Father Paul's going to address. But people become more and more depressed as they move away from normal life. So it's bad, brothers and sisters. It's bad. But it's shocking to hear people inside the church. That's shameful to me. And forgive me, I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm not going to apologize for speaking the truth as an Orthodox priest. And I don't care if Orthodox people come to me and say, Father, you know, it wasn't against our religious rights to close the churches down during the thing. Yeah, it actually was. How can you say that? It's not constitutional. Well, let me read the Constitution to you. You know, it didn't say you can go to church except for coronavirus, right? And so that happened. So it happened. Let's be real about, that's never happened before in American history. Never. It's never happened in the history of the church. Never. What happened? Unprecedented. Never happened in Greece. Never. An Orthodox country, and they went to arrest a priest who was caught sneaking out, giving communion to a little boy, and they got snap pictures, paparazzi. Unbelievable, right? So that's not normal. It's never happened in the bubonic plague, anything. So this should make you aware, whoa. And one of my good friends is a bishop said, who I think is the least apocalyptic guy I know, said, things are happening in the world that have never taken place in the history of the world. And I have to realize that the last 40 years had more change in the civilization of mankind than all the thousands of years from the beginning of it combined. And I would say that's happening in 6 months, at even more so. An exponential growth. But for us, life is always the same. That's the beauty. That's the way out, is that we're called to live the same exact way, which becomes strikingly more beautiful and sets hearts aflame even more as this happens. But we have to see what actually is happening with bravery, without being wimps, and without, out of fear, avoiding it and just acting like everything's fine. Right? On the other hand, not like whimpering and cowering. You know, C.S. Lewis writes, 1948, after the atomic bomb, everyone's about, you know, it's going to be an imminent atomic war, everyone's going to die. And he said, you know, it might happen. You know, because it wouldn't take much for everyone to be gone. Right? He says, but when this comes, may it find us doing normal things. Praying, going to church, being with our family, bathing the children, dancing, singing, you think he says, drinking a pint of beer over a game of darts with your friends, not huddled up in a room fearing and whispering about bombs. They can take our lives, but they can't take our minds. It's a very beautiful quote. And if you can read it from the church fathers, it's not original. It's not an original idea, but that's the Orthodox approach. I was at the monasteries recently. That's the Orthodox approach, not one of fear. We need to do what's always been done. But this exposes we're not really been doing that. So that's good. Let's figure out the problem, how bad it is. Let's look how Christians since the beginning have always tackled it. And the degree to which we start living that is the degree to which we're going to be just fine. And not just survive, we'll thrive. And we're not looking just to get by. We're looking to shine like the stars of heaven in Christ our God. That's the prayer for a newly baptized person. So, forgive me. I have no tolerance for people who are just going to put their heads in the sand and try to say, it's a Christian government. Stop it. Not true. Killing millions of people, innocent babies, and destroying the marriage. I mean, just now we're going to listen. They're going to tell us what love is. Forget it. But most people, we don't live in 1950s America anymore. And some people just kind of live that kind of secular way. Why? Because they're afraid of what it would look like not to. You might be persecuted. You might not be popular. You might not be liked. See, Christians are liked in 50s America. It's the norm. Everyone's a Christian. Right? You know, in the Middle East, if you wear a cross like I usually wear, some places you're killed. But in most of America, I mean, rappers wear big crosses, right? I mean, it's normal, right? So it's been normalized and it's been brought down to the earth and kind of humanized Christianity, and it's comfortable. It's the opposite. In other words, if you weren't a Christian, you were the weirdo. When I was growing up, everyone was kind of tacitly Christian in my hometown. My little hometown, there was a Catholic church. It's pretty funny. Catholic church across the street, Presbyterian church, Methodist church, old Whalers church, where all my family, I can do grave rubbing from the 1600s. We all went to like youth groups and bowling. It's just a hilarious, America's a funny place, right? But the point is, it was very odd to come across a person who didn't go to church. I think that was the norm for America, right? Even now, people, like last year, were 80% self-identified as Christian, but they're killing tons of babies and destroying their lives. So obviously something is wrong here, but now it's changing, right? Now it's odd to be a true Christian, right? But it's much more like early Christian times. And dare I say, when there's peace in the church, all the heresies come then. And when things are hard, that's when the faith really shines. So I want us to get real with each other today about what's happening. And we're really blessed with our parish. I mean, I go and I kind of lovingly gloat about all of you when I go to the monasteries, visit other parishes, and many priests would die to have the parish that we have here, Father Paul and I. We're really close. You know, I feel really close to almost all of you. Like, I actually like all of you. That's not always the case, you know? I mean, some priests, they love everybody, they don't like everybody, but I really feel a closeness. And I mean, I told my wife, I said, this is unbelievable. I probably could go through my phone, right, and I could 365. I bet you every single night I could call somebody in the parish and I could be at their home for dinner. I'm sure of it. About 500 people that come every night somewhere different and could feel loved. That's unbelievable in a world of loneliness. That's rare, brothers and sisters. The tight-knitness that we have with each other, and we have to work on it, right? So it's very blessed. We have services every day. We have divine liturgy. We have 2 full-time priests. You know, we're not a huge parish. There's a dedication. We're building a new church. It's awesome. Why did that happen? Why did we all come here in the first place? Well, I think, you know, we're all different people, maybe slightly different reasons, but in some measure or other, we realized there was a darkness in us. And we had to survive. Like, it was like, I can't live this way anymore, or I'm going to be in hell. And so we were kind of escaping the darkness of ourselves, you know, and it was killing us. And we fled back into the church of our youth if you were born Orthodox and raised in the church and left. Or for many of us who are converts, we sacrificed to find and just totally immerse ourselves in the ancient church, in the hospital, you know, the spiritual hospital. And it's growing because that's what it is. It's real. It's the body of Christ and the life in Christ, baptism, repentance. It heals people. It makes sense. It's a saint factory. It's a relic factory. It always has been and always will be. And that's why you're here. And that's why we continue to come and sacrifice. You know, that's the life. And it seems imperceptible sometimes. You might think, well, I'm not doing very well. But as a priest, the beauty is that I can see your progress, but you don't see it in yourself. Father Paul and I could both tell you that. Like, people say, I'm not making any progress. You know what? I don't want to tell you this because you'll get proud. But, man, things are going so much better for you. Right? You are growing. But God keeps you humble by not showing you that change. Thank God. But it's a fact. And people around us can see it. The title today was, what does it mean to be an Orthodox Christian? Well, it means to be forgiven. We came to be redeemed, but to be healed. But a lot more than that. That's what most Christians think. To be saved. To make it into heaven. To be follow a moral kind of forgiveness of transgressions. But it's way more for us as Orthodox Christians. And it's important to know that if we're going to get through everything and make it to the end, into the kingdom of heaven, it's to be united to Him. Not like, oh, that's a neat idea in a real way. No, it's about theosis. And that word thrown out a lot. LDS people love that word. In fact, I'm often told by LDS scholars that we're very similar. Right? Because they believe in theosis. We don't come to get into it, but not the same. Not the same. It's a less static vision of heaven maybe than Protestants. That's true. That's why Orthodoxy appeals to them, but very different. We say that it's like a parabolic line approaching a straight line, that a Christian in Christ approaches that to infinity. But the creation never becomes the creator. There's always a distinction that there's a God and I'm not Him, right? But we're called to be gods by adoption. Yes, God-like way more than we think. And a lot of people, in reaction to Mormonism, they go too far and they lower the bar of what it means to do. Listen to this elder. I was on Mount Athos. I had the great blessing to visit the monastery where they print these beautiful books, some of the best books. And listen to what this abbot said. The question, the destiny of our lives, is a very serious question. It's the most serious question. For what purpose are we placed on earth? If man takes a correct stance in this issue, if he finds his true destiny, he'll be able to take a correct viewpoint in relation to everything else in daily life. Everything flows from this. Relationships with each other, our studies, profession, marriage, bearing and upbringing of children, everything. But if not, if he doesn't figure this out, he will utterly fail in all of life's particular purposes. For what meaning can a particular purpose have if human life as a whole has no meaning? Awesome. So what is it? He says, it's made very clear at the beginning. He says, you know, what's the purpose? Theosis. It means divinization, to become godlike. For man to be united with God, not in some external or poetic or sentimental, touchy-feely way, but actually, in a real way. Man is placed so high in the Orthodox understanding that if we compare it with all the other philosophies of the world or psychological systems or these social systems nowadays that want equality, thinking that they're raising the level of mankind, no. We realize very easily how pathetic these are, how poor they are by comparison, how little they correspond to man's great yearning for something very great and true in his life. Since man is called to be a god, as long as he does not feel himself on that path of theosis, he feels an incredible emptiness within himself. Look at those Antifa kids, all these people out there. They're empty and lost and trying to find meaning. We shouldn't hate them. We should have compassion and prayer and tears for them. He feels something's not going right. He's not joyful, even when he's trying to cover up the emptiness of other activities. He may numb himself, create a glamorous world, a cage, and imprison himself inside this world. At the same time, he always remains poor, small, and limited. He may organize his life in such a way that he is almost never at peace, never alone with himself. Surrounded by, he wrote this like 40 years ago. Surrounded by noise, tension, radio, right, television. Imagine with a smartphone now. Continuous information about this and that, he may seek to forget with drugs, food. Not to think, not to worry, not to remember that he's in the wrong path and strayed from his purpose. In the end, contemporary man is wretched, and he finds no rest until he finds that something else. The highest thing. The thing which actually exists in his life, which is truly beautiful and creative. A man to unite with God commune with Him, and become a God by grace. That's awesome. That's why you're here. And I think most of you know that. I hope you listen to the preaching, you've been coming for a while. That's precisely what drew you, is that purpose. And I'm going to make that very clear. It's so beautiful. When I hear that, it reminds me, even as a priest, like, it sets my heart aflame. And I think it always has, for 2,000 years, set aflame the hearts of sinners. And it always will, no matter how bad this world gets, people will always be attracted by the sweetness of Christ. But we have to live it all in. That's the problem. Be aware of the things that would keep us from this true goal. And that goal is real happiness and real joy. And we're robbing ourselves of real happiness, just even in this life, let alone the next. Right? And we'll keep ourselves from the goal. We're not aware of the landmines. But we'll keep others from finding their purpose too, because they should find it in us. I think in all measure we've experienced some of this grace, thank God, that keeps us coming, you know? And hopefully we're taking it deeper each day. You know, we have a little piece of joy in confession maybe, or in the liturgy, go, oh, I felt the presence of God, even though it's hit or miss maybe. But we get stunted, right? There's a stunting that takes place, especially if you're newly baptized, you're psyched up, you know, maybe you're born and raised in the church and you return to piety, made a life confession, you're fasting, you're serious, and then all of a sudden you're newly baptized, and all of a sudden, boom. Elder Sofoni says it's inevitable, this Saint Sofoni, this tank, kind of, so to speak, and the flashiness wears off, and we go, what's going on here? Why the lack of growth? Why the stagnancy? Hey, I got baptized. Hey, I'm doing everything right. I'm checking the box. What's going on? There's a lot going on there, but in relation to what we're talking about today, there's a main one I want to address in these next weeks, and I think it's one of the main ones, is that we've remained very worldly in pretty insidious ways, while acting like we want to change too. Maybe consciously, often unconsciously. We've been lulled to believe that things in the world, they're not that bad. Generally, America's pretty good. You know, it's good and it supports church. You know, America's a Christian country. And then, so thus we get sucked into the life that we love anyway, before we came probably, into the secular life. And there's no sense of urgency, at least from the outside, right? Or so we think, and only when we honestly look at the darkness in our own hearts and we repent, and then we still see something, and an urgency comes from within. But that's changing very quickly if we look around us. And it has been for a while, if we're honest, and we've been in a fog kind of lying to ourselves. You know, our non-Orthodox family, some might hate Orthodoxy, some might like it, but a lot of them just for a while, like, oh, it's cool. It's cool. It's like, look at the art. And look how your priests have beards and stuff. And blah, blah, blah. You know, there's like kind of this neatness factor. That's going away. It's going away. I've noticed it. My family, who was very like open, like, do whatever you want. You go to church. Now, I've seen it in my own family. I've seen it in my own friends. An incredible lack of tolerance all of a sudden. Tolerant of everything except Christ. And it's just, it's unfortunate and it's sad, but it's just the reality of what's happening. So simply put, things are deteriorating at a rapid pace. And it's hard to keep track of, to be honest. It's happening so fast. And to be honest, who really wants to? And I can see the temptation to go like, no, just take your head in the sand. And if we lived in a desert somewhere, you might say you could do that. Or if they're in a monastery, but even the monks can't escape it. And the nuns, they told me as much. They see it too. But we need to be real. And we really need to acknowledge that we have been comfortably worldly. And it's led us to believe we could do both, right? Have one foot in the world, one foot in Christ. And the Lord says, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve God and mammon. And yet, we all try to do that and wonder why it's going poorly. But that's coming to an end where we can, like, and that's a good thing, actually. It's quite shocking what's happening. It's quite terrible what's happening in the world. And yet, as one priest told me, what a wonderful time to be a Christian. My friend Father Paul Yaroslav up in the Northwest. He was a big hippie in the 60s. I think he was fighting. He was an evangelical Christian. And he was like fighting, you know, flowers. And he's been through all this stuff and fought communism and fought all these things. And he says he's excited for him and his people to live truly Christian lives. It'll purify us a lot of our worldliness. So what will your family, your friends, your employers say if you simply stated your beliefs? I think a lot of us would be shocked by that. I think, but not when I was a kid, right? When I was a kid, if you said, you know, I think marriage is the norm. Like, yeah, what are you? Right? You know, of course, right? Homosexuality wasn't really around. I mean, it was around, but it was weird. And most people would say, nah. Right? They wouldn't be like, string them up, or say horrible things like that. No. But they would say something like, oh, yucky, I don't want it. Right? That's a pretty normal response, I think. And that's not judgmental. Now, the world would say, I should go to jail for that. Right? So, but that's just how every Christian in the scriptures, every not even Christian society, all societies believe, the Jews, the Muslims, everyone believed that. Right? So it was normal. So just to say, I believe marriage is a man and a woman. I believe anything aside from that is a distortion, and it can lead to a bad place. I think sex before marriage is a really disastrous thing. You know, and just to say basic things like that, or even to say things like, all lives matter. Why? Like, yeah, everyone would go, yeah, you numbskull. Who would say otherwise? Imagine saying that was a kid. Right now it's like, that's racist. Right? To say that police are good things and they do nice things to help people. Yeah, it's common sense. Right? There's bad people everywhere. My basketball coach in high school was a police officer. Right? And like, it's like, it wasn't, there's bad people everywhere, but like, we have prayers for the blessing of soldiers and the blessing of like police and all, because they protect people. Right? Like, that's just like, and this isn't like deep theology, brothers and sisters. It's like normal life, right? Like, lock on door, good if bad situation, right? Like, having a strong husband protect wife, good. Well, that's for sexist. You know what I mean? Like just the basic thing. You know, it's like, if you're hungry, eat something. If you're thirsty, drink some water. Like earth, right? To so-and-so, right? He laughed. So, this is a kid here, gets it. Right? But that's how idiotic it is. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills a lot nowadays. Do you feel that way? Reading the news, like, there's a joke in that satire Babylon Bee or The Onion, you know, like, it's like, I'd read the regular news and go, wait, no, this can't be real. This actually can't be real. And then you go, it is real. That's how crazy and it's happening. So we laugh a little bit, but we need to be real about it. So imagine if you were honest. I know a person told me, Father, if I said what I believe, I'd be fired from my job. Well, how long are you going to skulk around in the shadows and hide? Too long we've done that. Too long, I said, and this person told me, they might come down to where I have to wear this name tag, and it has to have, like, you know, the rainbow, and I have to support all this stuff, and for now I've been able to dodge it. And I said, well, what are you going to do? And I was proud of this person. He says, well, I'm going to have to find something else out. I'm not going to do it. I might have to lose my job. I might have to get a different job at lesser pay. I might have to get a smaller house. I might have to, all for the love of Jesus Christ, and you'll be rewarded. And that's what Christians do. But a lot of us don't do that, because we're not all in. We go, oh, what would the cost be? All the, not looking at the spiritual cost. Right? So a lot more of that kind of testing is going to happen. I know a priest friend who's a kid in his parish at school, straight up just said, I think homosexuality is sin. I think it's wrong. And expelled from the school. So why isn't there a just rash of Orthodox kids being expelled from schools in the past few years? Can someone tell me why? Help me out. Because they don't say anything. Yeah, homeschooling, you wish. That's where things are going. But because they don't say anything. Because maybe they weren't taught it. Maybe their parents didn't want to believe. Right? Their parents live the normal life and they assume it's going to pass on. That assumption is deadly. It was then and it is now. Right? You don't hear about it because some kids are just in the shadows just trying to get by. One kid told me that he's bullied. Because he's not transgender. Because he's not experimenting with different sexes. That's where it's at now. It's, imagine that. Who would? Why put your kid in that situation? Right? We're going to talk about the other situation more. But let's just get real. My family, even, I think a few years ago, would say, oh, you're a priest. You're doing good things. I know some family and former friends when I was young who would say, people like you are the problem, Father Justin. People like you, they're intolerant bigots, are the problem. And people like me should be in camps. I'm serious. People that told me you have so many kids, that's child abuse. They shouldn't allow you to have more kids. I've heard this in my own ears. Whereas you go to Serbia or Greece, they don't have it's poor as beans, and they say, you're a rich man if you have children. And Americans used to think that way too, right? So let's be real about, when you want a litmus test, what would it be like if you really were claimed openly, humbly but boldly your beliefs? I think you'd be exiled completely from many, many places. And that's why we're quiet. And I don't think that'll be as possible anymore, right? It's rapidly new, and yet this is a new thing, but it's not new for like our people from like Russia or Romania who have like been through communism. They can smell it. They can smell that kind of totalitarian way of controlling all parts of people's lives, right? Where it's like that sense of total intolerance is tyrannical. Get in line, you know, follow the party line or face the consequences. Right? Like, talk about the sheeple that's happening nowadays. People think they're all brave, you know. And the coronavirus, okay, it's a real thing. It's a real disease. It's a real disease. If you get it, it can be bad. But you know, 2 years ago, people were really sick with the flu. People should be dying left and right around us. But what's happening, right? So let's see it as it is. But let's not. But what happened? You might die. Ooh, what do we do? Put a mask on, not go outside, not live as human beings, live as rats. The only safe place is a rubber room. Whatever it takes, we don't lose our skin. Wow. Didn't take very much. Jump. How high? Right? Didn't take a Stalin. It took very little. If we're honest, very little. A whisper. You're going to die. Which we're the first generation to actually not just believe that and know that, because life is so different now. But it was like sheep that want to save their skin. And we have to look to visionary people, the saints, but even recent people. How many know who Alexander Solzhenitsyn is? Do you know who he is? What a great man, Orthodox Christian man. Survived the Gulag. You should read his book, The Gulag Archipelago. It's big. It's the abridged version. It's a little easier. I read about, that's how I found St. Benjamin, my son's saint, by reading about him there. He survived it. He escaped. And he spoke, told the whole world about what was happening. And he was a prophet. And listen to what he said about America. I am not a critic of the West. I'm a critic of the weakness of the West. I'm a critic of a fact we can't comprehend. He was saying this like in the 70s. How one can lose one's spiritual strength, one's willpower, and possessing freedom, not value it at all, and not be willing to make sacrifices for it. That's exactly what happened recently, right? He says, that, what do we do? How do we live? The simple act of an ordinary brave man is to not participate in the lies. Not to support false actions. His rule, let that come into the world. Go ahead. Let it even reign supreme, only not through me. But it's within the power of spiritual people, writers, and artists to do much more than that, to defeat the lie. For in the struggle with lies, holiness and art has always triumphed and shall always triumph, visibly, irrefutably, every time. Lies can prevail against much in this world, but never against the spirit and never against art. Awesome. Right? It's truly awesome. So you might say, okay, what's going on? Quick overview. You can't go anywhere without seeing BLM, right? Everywhere. It's unreal. It's unreal. Right? It's taken over everything. It's all because of this, mass media, everything. Everyone's talking about it. I'm so sick of it. My little Justina goes, I'm so thinking about hearing about Black Lives Matter. You know, she's like so funny. You know, she doesn't even know what it's about, but it's everywhere. All the kids are seeing it everywhere. If they go to public school, they're being taught about it. There's teachers who are not teaching the curriculum and pushing this. You be sure of it. I've heard it from their own mouths. It's painted on the basketball court in the NBA. Anaxios. Unworthy. I have nothing to do with the NBA ever again. Ever. Or Major League Baseball. I love these sports. We love these things. It's horrific. You might go, why is it horrific? Let's be reasonable, Father. Okay. Is it bad to say Black Lives Matter? Of course not. Look at our walls of our church. We're not racist. We're Orthodox Christians. This is ridiculous. We're sinful in plenty of ways, but that's not really our struggle. And if it is your struggle, only Jesus is going to heal that in the church. But it's all this time, right? We're not going to legislate against it and fix it all of a sudden, right? So, of course they matter. But what is the Black Lives Matter? What comes behind that? We need to know the truth. I was shocking people at the monastery. People, what's happening? One of the monks says, I said, let's look it up. You go right on their own website. It is unreal. The two ladies that run it, the two lesbian ladies that run it, are trained Marxists, they call themselves. Maoists. Formed. We fought wars against that. We did everything to you know how many lives were sacrificed to avoid that? We know where that goes. Okay. And we're going to do this. We support homosexuality, of course. We support transgender, of course. We just support the destruction of the Western nuclear family. It's right there. I'm not making it up. Look on their website. That children can be raised not by a parent, by two parents, by women and children in villages together as they feel comfortable. I'm quoting exactly. That might take. To destroy Western cisgender normalcy. You know what that means? Father Paul will explain that more. But cisgender means I'm heterosexual. I haven't changed that, so I'm naturally. So I'm just like an unwoke person who's just going with the flow. Right? We need to. That can't be the norm anymore. Heteronormativity. Right? Like, huh? And it's like not very long. It's like boom, 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 boom. What? Abortion. All those things. So what the world is swallowing is, wouldn't it be, if it was just saying, hey, let's try to like correct some of the craziness and some of the police brutality. Sure, let's give them more training. But they don't want to fix things. Brothers and sisters, the devil doesn't want to fix things. He wants to destroy things. Right? The devil wants... People don't want to just like fix America. They want to destroy America. I'm not lying to you. I'm not making it up. I'm not being apocalyptic. People, I've heard people say it. You know, one of the mentors of some of the very popular politicians nowadays, he thanks Satan in his biography. And he says that this is all going to be doing to what? To let America as we know it implode. Why? So that in the midst of this chaos, from the fiery furnace, the ashes of what we thought was America, a great phoenix will arise of a new civilization. I'm about to have a heart attack hearing that. Right? But that's not new. And that's what's believed by a lot of people. So when you wonder, why this? How would someone want that? Because we're simple. I think, people want goodness and kindness and human. No, not everybody does. There's evil in this world, brothers and sisters. And even good people can be led to it and think they're changing the world. Right? They can think they're doing the work of God. The Lord said that. Right? They think they're doing the gospel by killing you. But that's really where things are going at an unprecedented rate because of this and because of a lack of a love for God. I never voted. I promise you I'm not a political person. It's a spiritual issue of what's happening. So it's very important for us to know. So it's in basketball. It's in every major movie. It's in all of Hollywood. You can't, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. When I see a Campbell's soup commercial, I was sick, literally sick. There's a dad feeding his kid some soup and he's doing like the thing like, Luke, I'm your father, right? Like Star Wars, Campbell's, like soup. And then another guy comes in, No, I'm your father. I was like, what? This is a Campbell's soup commercial, right? Never buying Campbell's soup ever again. Am I a bigot? No. I was around a lot of homosexuality when I was in New York, when I was a young guy, things like that. I've been all around it. And having been all around it, it's sick. And we just stand up and say, it's wrong. It's a perversion, it's wrong. Can the church heal it? Yep. Many a person has come to these walls, afflicted by that sin and many others, and with repentance has been healed and is living a holy life. That's unpopular, right? It's unpopular. No, what's real love is to save people's souls from hell. What's false love is just let people wallow in their sins and call it virtue, right? And St. Anthony said, the day is coming when they're going to find the last same person. And they're going to find him and say, let's get him. He's not like us. Let's arrest him. That's what we're coming to. Thank God there's more than one. And there's actually more than you think, but they're all afraid. But not us. We can't be afraid, brothers and sisters. So it's all over the place. And of course, now with the coronavirus, right? Do you remember at the beginning of all this, there was earthquakes here. Remember that? Deacon John was in here. Everything was like shaking around and the doors were opening, right? And that was quite a crazy time, wasn't it? You think that just happens by accident? But St. Gregory of Sinai, I think, says that like, the Lord does... Everyone saw a sign in those things in the old days. Wake up! But not us, right? It must be just coincidence, right? No, of course not. All these things happen. The coronavirus, the lockdown, the rise of all this. It's not conspiracy theory to go to read the scriptures, to read the saints of the church and go, okay, things are getting real. Why do we assume it's never going to happen to us? Because we're afraid. We want things to perpetually remain the same as they were. Right, Birdie Bunch forever. Right? But if you talk to people that have suffered in other countries, they're like, who are you kidding? Elders for years on Mount Athos, other places have told me that, Father, there's going to come a time. If those of you who know me as a priest, 10 years ago I was saying this. So there's going to be a time when it's going to be less comfortable here, and Americans are going to suffer, and we've never been in a breadline before, we've never struggled, but it'll be good for us, elders say. And it was so awesome to preach that, but now it's like, oh, okay. Now rubber might hit the road here. But you know what? More than ever, I think it's going to be beautiful. I don't know what's going to happen. May none of this happen. But we have to be aware. Know the lay of the land. Be real. Not apocalyptic. Real. Right in the middle. A royal path. Not like sticking your head in the sand, oh, it's all fine till we're dead. Spiritually. Or the other end, just like, so not living. No. Let's live, the abbess told me, let's live the same holy life of 2,000 years of Christians. If we do that, we'll be just fine. But it kind of exposes that we're not, right? There's a rise of technology. I can't believe this. You know, technology. You know, one world government. Do you know the fathers talk about that in the early days? There'll be, this is like 1,000 years ago. Right? There's going to be a division. All the divisions between countries will go away, and there'll be no more individual sovereign nations, and there'll be a rise of one person. Right? And everyone's Antichrist. Anti means in place of Christ. He'll be beautiful. He'll be virtuous. He'll be all of these things. It won't be like demon with horns, because no one will go after that. Except for some psychos. But like, majority of good people. But no, it's going to be beautiful. He's going to be more beautiful. And he's going to be so beautiful and be one religion and loving and, you know, and just like this rainbow love. It's going to be so amazing. And they're going to look at Christians and go, that's the problem. You see what? It's not hard to see that happening. That's been, and it's not like I didn't make that up. The church fathers tell us. You know, and the Lord says in the scriptures, when you see the fruit, when you see it ripening, we don't know the, no, we're not end time nutters. No way. The end of the life for us when we die, let's get ready for that, one elder told me. That's good enough for me. But we have to see the times that, and to be unready would be stupid. Right? To be unready would be stupid. And it's going to help us in the spiritual life. We've seen so much of this, and we've kind of hoped to stuff our ears, skirt around it, but it's not going to be possible much longer. And we got to know how to maneuver it and live in those times and shine. And how does that begin? First, a sober assessment of our own lives. And a sober assessment of the world around us and like the battlefield. You know, I got told today, I couldn't believe this. There's a whole video that the Church of Satan, by the way, that's a thing, you know that? The Church of Satan has now, is using religious rights, kind of twisting Christian religious rights to say they have a right to their own first term abortion right. And they say these affirmations and they do this whole thing. Right, Dick and John were talking about this. It's out. There's a YouTube video about it. It is unbelievable. What's more unbelievable is you go, is this the Onion? I hope. No. And then look at the comments section, which I never do because it's trash. Everyone, this is awesome. This is incredible. Thousands. This is so amazing. Glory to God. Hail Satan. Everything. Hail Satan. Hail Satan. Right? In all the comments. Like, the world's not what you think it is. We're blessed to be around. I tell my kids can't fathom this. And I say, that's because you're around awesomeness. That's because you're so blessed. You know, we'll have Michael come over to our house and speak about literature. And that book you gave my son, he's reading it. And he's pouring himself into it. Like, that's not normal. I mean, I was raised with good people, but not this good. Really. To know that there's all these fine men and ladies in our parish that our kids can look up to. You know, I can say, like, you know, I want my kids to be like Rick. I do. I respect him. You know, I want them to work with David and Rick and Kevin and all these different people and the clergy. And they can look to everyone and say, that's a virtuous person. That's not normal. I wish I had that. And it's way not normal for the world nowadays. Right? But when you take that away, it's easy to see why hearts can become so hard and so cold and how things can get quite crazy. People can be the church of Satan and they have a special thing to make them feel good about the abortion and all these things they say. And they want permission to be in the abortion clinic and do it all at the same time. I'm not joking. How is that possible? But you can't go to church, right? That would be dangerous. Unreal. You want a time of craziness? Craziness, right? We're not in a normal world anymore. It was announced this week, my friend's a priest in San Francisco, churches are closed. Except for the Antiochian churches. God bless Metropolitan Joseph, who's telling us the priests to be brave and you know, with being careful, but you know, being brave. But some of the churches are closed, right? But gay bathhouses opened this week for the sake of the economy. I'm not joking. Look it up. You kind of go, that can't be true. I mean, but you know what? It's not normal here anymore. Like using rational thinking. Father Paul was telling me this. He knows a lot more about it. He says it's all ideological emotion. Right? It's, you can't think. In fact, if you think too clearly, that's a sign of your racism. That's a sign of your being white. Actually, yes, that you depend on too much linear thinking. I'm dead serious. That's a good quote from the Smithsonian recently. Huh? Smithsonian Institute for Black Studies said, a study on whiteness. The problem with whiteness is rugged individualism. Emphasis on hard work and equality of outcome. Rather, you know, quality of opportunity and outcome. Christianity, believing, emphasis on linear logic and dialogue, overemphasis. Talk about being so racist against black people. So you're saying that black people don't work hard, can't have an honest conversation, aren't Christians, can't do anything? That's what they're saying. And our taxpayer money paid for that. Like, up is down, and down is up. Right? You can go and scream in a protest, fine. You can do everything here, but you better not go to church, or they're going to shut off the electricity and water to your church. This is real. You know? But you have people walking in BDSM, leather, all this stuff, walking into these. I'm dead serious. Dead serious. And it's fine for the economy. Things have changed. Right? I'm trying to give examples. It's not pretty. Right? Life. Let's talk about life. It's not respected at infancy. Abortion rates are unbelievably through the roof. It's horrific what's happening in America. At the end of life, euthanasia. Made way worse, by the way, during the COVID thing. Now you could do it over the phone, get this stuff delivered, and almost do it yourself. Did you know that? A lot of states totally fast-tracked it with none of us knowing to allow that to happen much easier. Sick. And a Christian country would never have done it. Never. Marriage. It's despised. You can't even find people that have been married for a long time anymore. It's warped. Divorce at an all-time high. Now you have all kinds of crazy marriages. Someone told me that their kids were married in a throuple. I'd have to go look what that was. When three people are married together, kind of, and polyamory and polygamy, and that's not new here, but homosexuality, LGBT, transgender, pedophilia. You can look, if you reported pedophilia, a listing on Facebook, the response from Facebook, you know what it'll be? Is, we've seen that. Thank you for showing this does not violate our code of conduct. Yes, it is a lifestyle choice. Do you know that's true? I'm not making that up. I did not believe this. Again, you've got to be kidding me. But this is the level of sickness that's happening. And guess what? It's not just there. It's going to be required. It's going to have to be indoctrinated, and you're going to have to learn it in school. I'm not joking. It's absolutely true. It's terrifying, but it's true. We have to know how to avoid all these landmines, right? It's unbelievable, right? It's the passions, not reason, not God. It's how you feel. Whatever makes me feel good. The tyranny of the passions and this woke mob now, right? Children, oh, they're a burden. Right? They're a burden. No more large families anymore. Hardly ever large families. No more trust in God. It's considered child abuse. Trying to control the will of God. Even Orthodox Christians, I want a baby now. I don't want a baby now. Rather than just trusting God completely. Right? And what happened? You see the problems. People say overpopulation. That's a lie. That is a lie. People are dying like crazy. Do you know that, right? Tons of people die every day. Way less people are born. Like in America, like Utah is single-handedly keeping the population up. And me. Right? Right? It's shocking. And people, but it's a lie. Again, if good people are duped because they're, looking at fake news and all this kind of stuff, and they're just not praying, and they're not seeking God, not living the way it's always been lived. I'm not saying read better news. I'm saying don't read news at all. Read the eternal news. It's always been the same. It's always fresh and new, and it's always a way of living. It might be less popular, but it's still as life-giving. Right? We need big families. We need, when I was in Georgia, Patriarch Ilya is one of the holiest men in the world. He can barely move. This man is such a giant of the spiritual life. He so has Parkinson's so bad. You should see him when you have to hold him during the liturgy. When he goes to bless the chalice, it's like Christ in Gethsemane, like sweating blood. Like he's just to bless the chalice, but he won't give up serving. And they do mass baptisms like every few weeks, like 700 kids. And after four kids and up, he's the godfather of every single kid. Because this is the way Christians live. Right? That's a beautiful thing. But that's the opposite of happening in America. We're killing them. And they're blessing them and seeing them as the blessings from God. Right? So, again, work, no more hard work. Rugged individualism, healthy competition. Most schools are getting rid of valedictorians. Do you know that? Did you know that? You guys knew that, right? You know why? Who can tell me why?
Trade.
No, well, not that. Because it makes others feel bad who aren't the valedictorian. Right? So everybody gets a trophy kind of mentality. That's a communist. Right? It's like if there's no healthy competition, there's no striving. Even the saints challenged each other. If you read some of the lives of the monastics, they would challenge each other in a healthy way. That's called human life and striving and courage and manfulness. And now we're just lowering the bar. It's deadly. Right? And what's the result? Guys are pathetic now in general. Sorry, guys. With a few exceptions. We're blessed in the parish. But they often don't know how to work hard. They're stuck in their parents' basement. They're weak wimps. Women say, I can't find a real man. That's because all society told them to be women. The modern world. Rather than embracing as the church does true manfulness. Now it's sexist. Right? That's where it's warped. Right? So then women have to adjust and they have to become more self-sufficient. And they're the main breadwinners. And of course, how can they have kids and be home? And it destroys the normal way of living for, thousands of years. And women who are so beautiful, who are so noble, right? Women had the modesty and the beauty and the humility and the service and the nurturing of women is considered weakness now. Not for thousands of years in almost every culture in the world it wasn't. You know, of being holy nuns or holy mothers or holy wives. And then their purpose gets lost, of course, because their God-given purpose is lost, and they become depressed, and they think that they'd be like men to be happy, and boom, departure from God. Virtue. Sexual purity and virginity, gone. We have to protect our kids so much. Immodesty, masturbation, sexual perversion, pornography, even software pornography. Like, you ever seen that billboard that says, cosmopolitan is pornography? They're right. Right? Like, but we're so numb to it, we think it's fine. It's not fine. If it instills a temptation in you, it's not fine. Right? Recently, in Teen Vogue, and that's so sick and demonic for teens, right? And then it says, not only are police the problem, but what police are guarding, private property. Pound, get rid of private property. Are you following me there? What does that mean? Who can help me out? Communism. Get rid of, confiscate people's private property and redistribute the wealth. That's exactly how it began, brothers and sisters, in Russia under Bolshevism. Exactly like this. Exactly like little ways, inroads in society. Teen Vogue? My God. Right? It's happening. Right? And it's not some like ditzy teen girl that thought that up. You can be sure of that. It's somebody else inserting it into their minds. Absolutely. It's getting way worse. They want to institute it. Drag queen story hour at the library. That's true. You know that? Sick. You're a librarian. You know that. It's demonic. You know, My Two Dads books. If certain things happen in the government, there are people, and I've read it, the new order in schools will be to teach self-pleasure, I'll say that, the age of 4. To give and receive sexual pleasure in the ages of 5 and 7. Normalize, to destroy heteronormativity, as they say, and to instill LGBT, all these kind of values. And you can't opt your kids out of it. Sick. And you said for a while, I can make it that. No, you can't. Some place like in Canada, you can't now. Right? We don't know what our freedom is until it's taken away from us. It's required. Why is that, by the way? Because they want to. They care about you? Want socialization? No. Indoctrination. A quick history lesson. We all kind of think that everyone went to school the way we went to school. Right? I remember the homeschool co-op with the kids. They were kind of being disorderly. And I said, sit down. I said, put your head like on your desk in school. And they're all like, huh? Huh? I'm like, oh, you're not public school. Shoot, you know what that means. We all know that, right? Like, you know, heads down. You ever played heads down, seven up or whatever, you know? Heads down, thumbs up or whatever, and you go around. And we have that collective experience, right, in school. That's not the normal way of education for the history of the world. Michael can correct me. I'm not a historian, but it came around like in Bavaria, right? Like in Germany, kind of pre-Hitler. Is this right, Michael? Like, and it was not for education. It was for indoctrination. To imbibe nationalistic, to make them, it wasn't for education. How was education done? Tutors. Small group, private tutors, Aristotle, you know, everyone up till recently. Homeschooling was not abnormal. People raised their own kids. The idea that that's a very communist idea. Moms, you work for the glory of Russia, of communism, and we will raise your children for you. That was the norm in communism. We'll raise your kids, we'll form them for you, you can work. Opposite of Christianity, but you can see how it's rising. History, you know, one of the blessings of COVID is that you're going to have a lot more homeschoolers, thank God. People told me when I said it, like, you're such a weirdo, Father Justin, left the parish over it and stuff like that. Well, look what's happening now. I'm not saying I told you so, I'm just saying I hear the confessions. Father Paul hears the confessions. We know the difference of what it's like. It's terrible. And it's going to get way, way worse. So homeschooling is going to be a good thing. Glory to God. And you know what? To be honest with you, it's been bad for a while. I learned every bad thing I ever learned in high school. Really. The first time someone snuck off and said, hey, Haven, just go smoke a cigarette behind them. Right? Yep. Even your priest, I try a cigarette. Yep. And you go back there and like, okay, you might say that's harmless. No, it wasn't all harmless. Only by the grace of God and my mother, like, you know, beating me up and taking care of me, saved my soul. But it was bad then. And I think we lied to ourselves because it's way, way worse now. If you heard the confessions that I hear, it's terrible. At a much younger age than you and I were hearing and experiencing those things. And the indoctrination begins early in middle school, high school, college. Father Paul's going to explain that college is a cesspool. Not just in terms of sexuality and all that, for sure. but in terms of what's being taught. I know students have gone to a Christian school and they become atheists from the classes at that school, from the professors. It's the place where total anti-Christian, communist, demonic things, it's a hotbed for that. And it's been that way how long? 40 years, Michael? Right? When Solzhenitsyn came to Harvard in the 80s, all the liberals at Harvard hated him for speaking about his suffering in the Soviet Union when they hated him. He was blacklisted. And that was 40 years ago. It's only gotten a lot worse. So we have to be aware, not just say, oh, I tell people, no, my kid's got to go to Harvard. My kid's got to go. Why? How about they save their soul? How about your? What if your son became an electrician and he was a heck of a man and he had purity and he saved his virginity and he met a wonderful woman? He was a hardworking. He was a stud, man. He was hardworking. He was in church. He was a natural man. And then he did things the right way and he struggled and had a little home as an electrician. He worked hard and he raised a family. Is that like a loser? That's glorious because he's living a holy life. But see, we've all like, now everyone has to be amazing, do amazing. And I go, we could go to Harvard and lose their soul. Yeah, I know, Father, but what? Like, rubber's hitting the road now. Do you really care? Or do you like say I'm a Christian, but really you live otherwise, right? It's going to expose all that in time. But you can go to Harvard now. It's all online this next year, and you can still pay $50,000, right? So that's worth anybody's money, right? So it's really changing. It's coming to fruition now. Vanity is so terrible. Everywhere you look, everyone's obsessed with how they look, right? It's so terrible. You know, Exhibit A, yoga pants. Who invented those? Right? Thank God I've never seen them in church here. Never. But I have priest friends that tell people, you really shouldn't wear that to church. Your grandma wouldn't have to be told that. She would know. No one should see that curve in your bottom other than your husband. It's inappropriate. But we just, even Orthodox Christians, dance around in bikinis and act like, and then wonder why, I don't know why I'm so full of lust in Cancun. Huh? You know? I don't know how I got this beer in my hand in the bar. Huh? Like, it's like, we got to get real here. I don't know where the sexual temptation is coming from. Well, I don't know why this person is kind of attracted to me. Did I allure them? Yeah, maybe you did because those pants are so tight you can't get them off, right? Maybe not in church, right? He gets it. See? You know, skinny pants and guys are terrible too, by the way. Terrible. Not just women. I'm half joking, but I'm serious. I find women that are, that's why I married my wife, modest. So much more beautiful. So much more beautiful and real and humble. That's why I married her. It's mocked nowadays. I've never once told my wife, you should wear skirts. Never once told my daughters, you should wear skirts and cover your heads in church. Not once. It wasn't a conversation we had. My wife did it. She lived naturally that way. And my girls naturally wanted to be that. Never had to say a word. That's how it's happened naturally in the community, I think, here. Is modesty. But the world, that's mocked. It's horrible. It's the temptations, drugs, pot. You can't go to church. You can't go to this. But you can go to the pot dispensary in Denver, right? That's open, but you can't go to church. Whoa, right? Crazy. And I'll end with beautiful things. Art. I don't think there's beautiful art anymore. Music. Father Paul is going to show you some real doozies. Hopefully I actually won't show them to you. I'll just tell you about them. I was shocked. I'm so out of the loop. But what's passing is music nowadays. And this isn't just like me being like our grandparents and parents. And being like, oh, rock and roll. You know, like, no. I'm not saying that. There was always someone saying that was bad, by the way. At least. Right? Kiss is bad. Yeah, kids in Satan's service. How many knew that? Right? That's what it stood for. And they were pretty bad dudes. Right? But it's like, at least grandma was always saying, that's crazy. That's sick. Now we're in a place where you watch the stuff that passes as music. It looks like pornography. It's disgusting. It's not even talented in any way. There's no instruments. And every like dopey white kid's like, yeah, it's awesome. Right? And it's like, it stands for everything disgusting and horrible. How does your heart get attracted? How can you go to church and have that? Because you're messed up. That's why. And because you're a mess. And because your parents have let you become a mess. And the schools, because it's all become a cluster. That's real. We got to get real about it. Right? It's unbelievable. I'm so glad I'm a little bit out of it. I heard a little bit of it. Right? Even though it's some good rock and roll. Right? Even though that led to a lot of sin too, if we're honest. But it's at a place now of craziness. Is there good movies? Hardly. You can't find a show or a movie without everyone and their mother doing dramatic things, doing terrible sexual things, cheating, lying. Every other person's gay. You would think, if you ask kids, they would think every other person's gay. Do you know they did a poll? I can't remember what it was. They asked young people, what percentage of the population do you think is LGBT? And their response was like, they said like 35 to 40% was their guess. What's the reality? It's like 1 or 2%. Really. That's unknown to people. By the way, just as an aside, what percentage of men that claim to be homosexual are monogamous? Do you know the answer to that question? Zero. Pretty much. Less than 1%. Oh, it's love. Get out of town. Ask a person. Ask a friend of yours. Ask them. I've heard many confessions. I have friends growing up. You want to laugh at the idea of, you want to call that marriage? No way. Over our dead body. The marriage of a man and a woman is an icon of Christ in this church. And you want to compare that lust fest to marriage? No way. You see what's happening? Right? So we got to, again, we can be duped and be like, oh, come on, they love each other. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, I always tell people, can a brother and a sister love each other? Yeah, I mean, like in a sick way? Yeah, what's that called? Incest. So should that be allowed? No. But I get kids like this, high school kids, and they say, well, I said, all that matters is love, right? Yes, doesn't matter. If it's against nature, doesn't matter. That's judgmental. They have to love each other. I said, okay, brother and sister. Oh, God, no. Oh. I said, but they love each other. Does it matter? No, lucky, no. But you just said that all that mattered was love. Oh, you're saying that there's just something just primary and just, ugh, that's wrong against nature. Yes. Oh, wake up. Right? The world's forgetting that. We as Orthodox Christians can't forget these things. So, no one listens to classical music anymore. No one elevates their soul. Very few people. Why are there no more Beethovens and Bachs, by the way? Because they're all like in their parents' basement, like coding. Right? Creating the robots to take over the universe. That's why. They don't do beautiful things anymore. There's no more Dickens and Dostoevsky. There's junk. Junk, food of the soul. Education is horrible. History is forgotten. California recently decided, in LA County, they're going to get rid of American history. Did you hear this? American history is gone this year. It's going to be the history of racism in history. So they're not going to get history. They're going to get a bigoted one thing of it. In Chicago, a local representative said, I'll send you the video, he's asking for the discontinuation of the history curriculum because it's racist. Like, everyone knows, if you don't know your history, then what happens? You're bound to repeat it. Why are they pulling down statues? Why are they doing this iconoclasm? Because it's exactly what communists did. You tear it down, you erase history so you can rewrite it. We're not okay with that. We don't want to rewrite history. Even the bad stuff, you learn from it, right? The Christians know where they've come from. They know where they're going. We've got to really be aware of that. Get rid of history. Destroy, I think, the Lord of the Rings. How many have read the Lord of the Rings? Read it again. If you haven't read it, read it. Why? Read the books. They're awesome. They get this epic struggle between good and evil. And you see it's happening now, right? You know, it's like they're thinking that after they get the ring to one place, the destructive ring, we can leave and go back to our nice life in the Shire. We can forget about all the trouble in the world and just go back to our little hole. And then one says, no, it won't stop there. The fires of Isengard will spread, and then it'll go to the Shire. And all that is good and beautiful in the world will be gone. Everything will burn. And it does in the book. It burns. But there's an end to it. But the point is simply, we put our heads in the sand and think, we're fine here. That's not the way. In Russia, there's a Russian proverb that says, everything's fine. Evil is fine until it knocks on your door. And it's knocking at our doors, brothers and sisters. And I think it's been for a while. There's been living delusion. And to face it is very beautiful. So we should read books like that make us, it's epic. It's now, you know. There's that part in The Lord of the Rings as well where they're going to the battle and they're afraid. And the little hobbit is afraid and he says to the wizard, like, I'm afraid. I didn't think it would happen like this. I didn't want this. I didn't sign up for this. And he says, so do all men that come to live in such times. But that's not given to us. The question is what to do with the time we're given. It's awesome. It's inspiring. People want a reason to live. They want a reason to... People have no purpose. That's why they're depressed and in drugs. But we have a reason as Christians. We stand up for what's true and what's beautiful. Maybe we thought before, well, everyone kind of knew that. But let it become clear that they don't. And they need to be shown by a holy life. They need to be shown. So, we're soldiers. And we have to know the enemy and the path to victory. So Father Paul and I are going to spend some time giving you an honest kind of sober lay of the land throughout these weeks. The traps. And if we're aware of it, and then we're also going to give you the life and the way and the way to navigate it beautifully. And from the lives of the saints. And so that we're not just scared. So we're gonna see the problem, but we're going to see the solution. And for 2,000 years, saints have overcome it. And it's not going to be any different now unless we're unwilling. And it's not going to be without suffering, without privation, but our souls will be intact if we keep kind of making it. But we need to be, I'm going to end with this. You know, we need to really do it for our kids' sake, but for our own sake. Right? We say, the kids are a good example because they're still ripe and they're still formable, but so are our hearts. As wounded as they are, we need to get very real. All the things I mentioned about our kids, we have a lot harder work because it's already formed in us in many ways. We've got to become aware of that. Like, what is real virtue? What's fake virtue that Father Paul is going to talk about? You know, we're bigoted Christians now. That's real love. We have no love. You know, being holy doesn't mean holiness, morality, godliness, purity. It means cheap, fake, you know, just wear a mask, social distancing. What is it? Wear a mask, social distancing, sanitize your hands. And what was the fourth one? Just stay home, right? There's a meme of a guy laying on his underwear on the couch going like, I'm saving the world. It's easy. No, it's easy. It's rather than repent for anything you've actually done, now you're like, do these simple things, and now you're kind of morally acceptable, and you're a good person in the eyes of a very sick place. Right, so you have to be aware of that, and it might soak into us. And Christ, he's despised now. It's not even like kind of hidden anymore. It's pretty open. Right? Christianity is persecuted subtly now, but not for long. How's that happen? By the devil, as always says, and by weak people. And let's be honest. A lot of people don't buy this stuff, thank God. Still, there are still normal, good people that we have to... But they're waiting for one brave person. There's not one brave person. There's not one brave politician willing to say this. Isn't that shocking? They're all afraid. Not one person. And the whole NBA, one brave man stood for the national anthem. My grandfather would have been cracking heads in that place. It's so disrespectful. I don't have to even argue it. My insides just turn. And I just go, what has happened? How did this happen? That now, not one person kneeling was bad enough. Now it's everybody kneeling because they're all afraid. It's demonic, right? It's what Solzhenitsyn was talking about. You're all a bunch of sheep and you're wimps and you don't really care about freedom and love. You care about being liked and getting your bread. Jonathan Isaacs, God bless that Christian man. Big, tall guy. He's the only guy that stood and didn't wear a Black Lives Matter shirt. One guy in the Major League Baseball as well. San Francisco Giants. Two people? Wow. Virtue has become rare in a very short period of time. But most people are afraid. And what's going to happen? If we don't get them now, if we're not bold, if we're not brave and praying and living this and standing up for it in a spiritual way, guess what? The people will go from normal but scared to then they'll follow it out of like obedience, out of fear, and then that submission will lead to conversion of their hearts to evil. Then you wonder, how could a person torture another person in a prison camp? How could that happen? Well, the depths of humanity is beautiful and terrible. When a person is well away from God, there's a deep, deep well of evil in people. So it can't be us. We have to know how to do this. So was this helpful to you tonight? I'm not trying to scare you. I'm not trying to but I want to give you an honest assessment of where things are at. But I can't emphasize enough that the rest of this time is going to be like, how do we make it through this? And the answer is, no problem if we cling to Christ. But a big problem if you're a really worldly person. My hope is in the next 8 weeks, you get a little self-knowledge. It's a mirror on you and you go, wow, that's got to go. Wow, I'm really putting eggs in that basket. Wow, I really care too much about that. Wow, I think there's be some revelations in our hearts. And the degree to which you peel off those worldly things is the degree to which you'll be less anxious and less afraid because you'll be living the life of 2,000 years. And come what may, the Lord always makes a way for us. It's very hopeful. The abbots and monasteries were so hopeful. Let's just live the way Christians have always lived, simply and with faithfulness in a community like this. Let's get off the internet. Let's get off the phone. Let's be together. Let's pray. Let's read. Let's sing. Let's dance. And come what may, we're doing normal Christian things. Does that make sense? I don't know. I find that very heartening. I need this kick in the pants as a priest. I think we all do. And what are you going to see? The church will become fuller. Not less full, but people will come because they're seeking. But guess what? If they're all afraid, they won't know where to go. A lot of religious people are afraid. Not Orthodox Christians. At least we shouldn't be afraid. And this is nothing compared to the history of the church. Right? So we have a little time for questions. If you'd like to ask any questions about anything I said. No questions? Come on. No questions at all? Again, we're going to talk about... Yes, please. The Cimmerillion. I haven't read it yet. My daughters have read it. That's like the book they found later, right? That's like the prehistory. Actually, Yeah, so I don't know. That's one of Tolkien's books as well. So there's so much great things. And we're going to talk about that practically. Read beautiful things. Put the TV away. Put in the trash can. Listen, if you watch only good things, read beautiful books. Lord of the Rings is an awesome book. Dads, read it to your kids. It's awesome. Right? They'll understand way more than you think. Read the Chronicles of Narnia. Read Dostoevsky, the older kids. Like, form yourself in this stuff. It's awesome. There's great films out there. There's great music. There's elevate your soul, chant music, classical music, beautiful things that elevate the soul. And there's good things in the world still. We have to salvage those and baptize those things. And it's not hopeless. It's very hopeful. Yeah.
What do you think is, I feel like it's, a lot of these topics are so emotionally charged topics that have been, I think a lot of people, yeah, just afraid to talk with our own families or different people. And I, part of me didn't feel like, I don't know if like qualified to discuss like all the ins and outs of like everything that's going on. What, I mean, as part of this, and I'm hoping to get more out of these classes, but do you think, is there a, there, a part of me, is like, when I learn something, I don't want to tell everyone I know, but then a part of me is like, you know, I don't want to alienate myself from my family or from my friends, and like, close off communication.
I'll repeat the question for the microphone. So, yeah, it's a good question, right? Like, we're learning about stuff. Don't feel qualified to really explain a lot of these issues. They're supercharged issues emotionally. And how much should we say? Should we not say? We're going to discuss that. But quick answer is, it can be a cop-out to say, I'm not qualified. It's not just for priests. The history of the church, some of the greatest saints were, I'm going to read to you next time, the life of St. Victoria of Carthage. She was like a teen girl. She's a teen girl. Listen to what they ask her. They ask her, were you at the Eucharist in front of the emperor? She said, we cannot do without the Eucharist. It's a foolish question. Give me the names of your associates. Their names are written in the heavenly book in the pages of God. It is not for your mortal eyes to behold what has been inscribed by God. Who put these ideas in your head? The Almighty God. I mean, she's as brave and bold. She wasn't trained in the sense of she wasn't like a priest or a bishop. She was just a person that loved God, right? So I think first we have to say that's the problem. That's what we have in this class is we're not adequately prepared. And that's our fault as priests. We need to, as teachers, we need to equip you so you can know. That said, being equipped with a gun doesn't mean you go shooting everybody. Right? You have to be careful with that. Because no one becomes Orthodox because you destroy them in an argument. Very rarely, actually. But when something comes up, you know what I mean? Like, so for instance, if... it's a good question someone asked me. Here's a good moral question. So if you're at a... You know, if I'm at a table and I hear someone next to me talking about homosexuality, I'm not going to interrupt their conversation and be like, no, it's actually disgusting. It's a sin. Right? I don't really think that's our place. Right? I think there might have been a time for that, but that's lost. We've lost that battle in many ways. Although I know a priest who says, he's at dinner with his wife and he hears people using foul language or speaking of such things, he guts up and he says, I'm not going to allow you to speak such disgusting words in the presence of my wife. If you have a problem with it, we can go outside. And they usually say, forgive me, I'm sorry. And then his wife's like, okay, sit down, honey. But I kind of like that. It's like, we stand for disgusting kind of conversation. In general, I wouldn't get into that. But someone asked me, if people are talking about abortion and blah, 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 how great it is. Someone said to me, I wouldn't say anything, right? I wonder. Because if it is what it really is, which is murder, if someone's like, you know, talking about how they murdered someone in the backyard, you're not going to go, that's their private business, I don't want to get into it. You know what I mean? There's certain sins that are transgressions against all humanity such that it's not your private business anymore. Right? It's not a right, it's a crime. Right? So it does raise these kind of questions, right? So my advice is don't go out looking for trouble. Don't go out looking for a fight. That's never helpful. That's not humble. Right? But when something is, and God does put the situation before us. When you're at your workplace and the conversation starts, you know what's going on. What do people usually do? The worst thing they can do is they go along with it. Get along. That's disgusting. That's something to be confessed. Right? The next step is they just silence. But silence is being complicit often. The next step is to say something and to say, forgive me, in a humble way, say, forgive me, but I think it's terrible. I think it's terribly wrong. And I've had many people in the parish do that, and it's maybe been a disaster, but maybe they've saved some people. I've had a person who wanted to have an abortion, and I told her no. She was a semi-tacitly Orthodox person, and I said, they said they're going to do it, and I said, absolutely not. And then I went to their house, and I knocked on their door, and so they let me in, and I harassed the lady, and then they called the cops on me, and I was taken away. She didn't do it next day. Good. I don't care. Whatever. It was worth it, right? Because it's a matter of life and death, right? So we think, well, I don't want to lose my job or be unpopular. At the expense of a life. Sick. Right? And so I think we have to remember what real love is. The world would say, I don't want to offend this person. That would be unloving. No. The unloving thing would be to let them perpetuate in darkness when you have the medicine. Not you personally, but Christ. Right? So it's not loving to tell a person who's living in an immoral relationship as a priest, I don't want to offend you. I love you, so just keep doing that. Right? As Father Paul told a family once, who was had someone in their family who was struggling with LGBT and transitioning, and they didn't say a word to the person. And Father Paul said, that was wrong. He said, why? Because at the judgment seat, which we all believe, when we stand at the judgment seat, I said, your son is going to turn to you and say, why did you do that? Why didn't you tell me the truth? You didn't really love me. You wanted me to like you, but you didn't really love me. You care more about my feelings than my eternal soul. How terrible. Right? I think we should look at things in light of eternity. And we often don't, right? We want to be liked. The Lord says you're not going to be liked. The Lord was the living God, and that was the treatment. So why do they persecuted me, they'll persecute you, right? So it has to be done with discernment, right? Not going to look for a fight, but if it comes up, bravery. And praying. Say, don't meditate beforehand what to say. The scriptures say just the Holy Spirit will give you what to say. But a bit of bravery goes a long way. It could save people's lives. Right? Someone's homosexual. What do you think of this? I say, I know it's a struggle. So many struggles in the world. But I found that Christ can heal everything. Even the things that the world thinks are normal. Like, when someone's an alcoholic, we don't just give them a t-shirt and say, it's just so great. Drink yourself into oblivion. Right? That's happening to LGBT stuff. Oh, it's who you are? Here. Destroy yourself. An unnatural life. No, because we love them, we're going to help them with that, even though it's unpopular now. You see? So, I would say discernment and time and classes like this, we're going to talk about. Father Paul is going to do a really good job in saying, so a lot of us, I think we know it's wrong, but we can't verbalize it, and you'd lose in an argument, and you'd come across like a bigot. How many of you are afraid of that? Yes? You avoid the issue because you don't know how to quite say it in a way that's nuanced. But there's very nuanced arguments, and we have to know it, and that's for everybody to know. That's for all Christians. It's a cop-out. Many old grandmas are literate, but they can tell you the faith in the old country. Right? Oh. Any other questions? Yeah.
You might cover this, but I have a lot of secular friends, and they would agree with everything you've said. They see all the problems in the world, but they fail to see how this is the answer. The second you get to Christianity, it shows
up. Sure. No, so what he said was, a lot of people would say, yeah, wrong. And then, but then the second you mention Christ or God or something, they go, well, they're turned off. And I think, first of all, you need to pray for them because something dynamic about faith, people have had a bad taste in their mouth. A lot of your secular friends weren't secular their whole lives, I bet. Right? They were raised LDS and left, and now they're kind of like this, like, that's most people. And they already have in their mind that, well, I never would go there. We have to, first of all, live a life that would be intriguingly beautiful enough that it would get them to rethink it. That's the first answer. That's a hard answer. Live a holy life such that they want to do what you're doing. And second of all, then speaking intelligently and say, well, why do you think that? Like, why are you just so sure that God's not the answer? Because how's it going for you without that? That's what my priest told me one time. I was like, is this really right? He goes, well, you can just stay with doing what you're doing. How's that going? Oh, I'm miserable. So maybe you have nothing to lose by maybe looking into something a little bit deeper. But it has to begin by a human interaction that inspires somebody else. There's no lack of pamphlets from Mormons and all that. We don't need more pamphlets in the world. We need more holiness and more truth in the world. So is this helpful? I know I went over the time. Forgive me. I think... Was it scary? No, sobering, right? But I hope you're intrigued and encouraged that the tools will be given to you in these next few lectures and really don't miss them. Father Paul will come to work, and especially the fourth lecture on the community, the monastery in the world, that's going to be real practical of what measures are we going to do? How are we going to raise our children? How are we going to deal with all these stuff in the world? How are we going to maneuver this stuff at work? How are we going to pray as a community? How are we going to maneuver whatever happens as together in real practical, concrete ways so we can make it? That's really going to be an important one as well, in addition to the other ones. Yeah.
Will you be addressing vaccines?
Vaccines, I think we will, right, Father Paul? I mean, I think that could come in the one session about talking about, I think, maybe bioethics, right, so to speak. We'll talk about it. It's certainly a relevant question, right?
They talk in general about the amount of
Yeah, I mean, the vaccines is a hot topic, right? Hot topic. But bottom line is that, you know, a lot of people don't know. Like, the way they make vaccines is they use aborted fetus cells. You know that? That's reality. You know, and because the reality is a lot of aborted cells. You say that it was one time 30 years ago. It's been perpetuated. They're not killing new babies each time for a lot of old vaccines, but it's a dance, right? But certainly, as they're pushing new vaccines and they're going really, really fast for now, trying to solve this problem, you can assume a lot of junk is going to go into there. Minimally, a lot of untested stuff, right? They're going to say, this is not tested, and that's risky, but there's going to be a cost balance in their mind, right? Even the flu vaccine is kind of like that. There's a lot of ingredients that are sketchy, but they figure for the sake of the greater good, but not for your individual good, right? As an epidemiologic, like numbers good, like is it going to work? But you know, flu vaccine a couple years ago was 20% good, right? It's a guess often. And coronavirus is like related to the common cold, right? When I was a kid, there's no cure for the common cold, but maybe they'll figure it out. But our hope is in God. That's the problem. People are like, we need a vaccine, We need to cling to God first and foremost, you know? And then we can kind of deal with those other things around there, right? That's a controversial issue.